Welcome to Superheroes of Science. I'm Steven.
And I'm Sarah. We co-host Science from the Experts. Our guests are professionals doing cutting-edge science right now.
They're experts in their field, discussing what they know best. So listen up and learn real science from real people.
Subscribe now and stay informed of our latest episodes and show your support. Joining us today on Superheroes of Science, we're pleased to welcome Tianyi Zhang, Assistant Professor of Computer Science here at Purdue University. So welcome. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And today's topic is machine learning, right?
Yep.
And we've talked to some people about machine learning, but it's kind of interesting that every time I ask somebody what it means, it seems like, for me, it gets a little bit clearer. And so I don't know how many times I'm going to have to ask people and have them explain this before I really understand it.
Right.
But I think our first question is getting your take on what is machine learning?
Yeah. Machine learning is a very big field. If you ask a different person working on different directions of machine learning, they probably give you a slightly different answer. So to me, machine learning is a kind of technology that learns some patterns from some examples given by human, and we call this examples training data, and they're going to use these learned patterns to make predictions. So have you heard about ChatGPT?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I actually asked the same question to ChatGPT last night. I asked ChatGPT, okay, explain what machine learning is to me as if I'm 5-year-old. And this is a very great example given by ChatGPT. I'm just repeating. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay, cool. So imagine you have a robot friend. It's a robot. And this robot wants to learn what is your favorite book. Okay? So you give this robot a bunch of books, and you tell it, this is the book I like the most. And the robot tries to figure out why you like the book. Right? It's trying to find the patterns of the books among the bunch of books you send it. Maybe the author name, the genre, the topic of the book, and the publisher, the length of the book, this kind of patterns. And then next time, when you give this robot a new set of books, it can use the learned patterns it observed from the previous example you gave it to make a prediction, which book you like the most. So this is the basic idea of learning from the training data or learning from examples and use it to make a prediction. Right? This is also the core technology behind some recommendation system on Amazon, eBay, and other shopping websites.
Okay. All those are generated machine learning based?
Yeah, and this example is generated by ChatGPT, which is another machine learning technology.
Okay. But someone had to tell us something to say that, to give that back, right?
Yeah.
And so how do you get to the point where I can ask, I mean, we were looking up stuff, kind of messing around at lunch, just a little clip. Doing the hand thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Keep waving my hands in the wrong places with the camera. Sorry. We're just actually had at lunch, there was a group of us got together, and someone had pulled up ChatGPT just to see what it would say.
Yep.
And we were entertaining each other more than anything at the time. Uh-huh. But I'm just going to use the word you as in you're representing all computer scientists in the world. Big shoulders there.
Yeah.
A lot of responsibility. But how do you decide how to weight data and what's important data in order for a machine to learn what you're trying to get it to learn?
Yeah, you just touched a very important part of machine learning, the data. So actually, nowadays, I think there is actually a job called data engineering. So their job, those people's job is to collect data and label data and decide what data is important, what is not. So it really depends on the domain. For example, for ChatGPT, basically its job is to have conversations with people, right? Mm-hmm. So they not only leverage some web data, but also OpenAI hired people to generate these conversations, like asking questions to ChatGPT and label the results generated by ChatGPT, like whether it's aligned with a human preference or not.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them actually write down the answers. Like if you ask a human what kind of answer you would give to this question, how would the human answer it? They write down the human answers and then use all this, it's actually a lot of data together to train the model, train ChatGPT. And then ChatGPT can learn the patterns in this conversation and learn how to answer new questions.
Yeah, I keep seeing that phrase used, training the model.
Yep.
And so I don't know if I understand entirely what that means, to train a model. Because to me, in my head, it's like you have data. You're like, hey, this is really important.
Right.
This isn't as important, but it may be a little important. And you're done.
Yep.
But apparently, it's more complicated than that.
It's all boils down to mathematics and also statistics. So basically, the model is essentially, nowadays, when we talk about model, it's essentially a statistical model. So think about running a regression on some sort of a bunch of data, right? Mm-hmm. You need to decide the slope of the line.
Mm-hmm.
And that is basically, the slope is a parameter. But of course, in real life, like ChatGPT and other kind of models, it's more complex than that. It's not like, not just a linear function that with a slope or a bias we want to learn, but it actually have a lot of model parameters in it. Okay. Like neural networks, it's essentially a bunch of linear functions composed together, but each linear function will have a slope and a bias term. And we need to keep tuning these parameters and until it fits the data very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so where is all the data stored?
It's stored on some computer, on servers.
Oh, like multiple, like yeah, because it just sounds overwhelming, the amount of data that there must be.
Yeah, so they often have a cluster of servers to store the data and also grab the data from the servers and train the model in a very distributed environment.
I would guess mm-hmm. that this is very, it takes a lot of processor power.
Oh, yeah.
To be able to, and so this, I mean, it seems like it's just in the last few years we're hearing about it,
mm-hmm.
but is my assumption of we're only hearing about this now because we only have the technology to be able to do it now?
We have the technology for many years, like a GPU, the graphical unit that mm-hmm. NVIDIA developed. It's been there for a while, and people have been using GPU since 2011 to build deep learning models. But I think it's really OpenAI start thinking about, okay, let's build these gigantic models. Let's use 100 GPU cards to train these gigantic models. Because, you know, train GPT-3 once, their initial GPT model, GPT-3 once, cost millions of dollars electricity bill. Only once.
Oh.
It takes a month to train, and to power all these machines, it costs millions of dollars.
Right? Oh, wow.
So it's actually, when you, like 4 or 5 years ago, when somebody tell you that they're going to spend millions of dollars just train this single model once, it sounds super silly, right? Computer science god do that,
uh-huh.
right? It's because it sounds like a very naive, but a very costly idea, right? Just like get a bunch of machines and then you train a gigantic model. But they did it, and they show that it's working incredibly better than all the other smaller models.
Mm-hmm.
And then now everybody start buying the idea. And also because they are partnering with Microsoft at the time. So they got a lot of computing resources from Microsoft.
Okay.
Otherwise, I think no program manager is going to approve this kind of crazy idea.
Yeah.
So,
that kind of money, wow.
Yeah, so you can see that science discovery oftentimes is actually because of accident. Like somebody come up with a crazy idea, they probably have a crazy manager approve this idea, and boom, you have a new science discovery. Right, everybody is following them now.
We all hear about the OpenAI, that's the ChatGPT, right? It's mm-hmm. off OpenAI. Are there other AI models that we're just not hearing about?
Yeah, basically there is a lot of competition going on because given their success with ChatGPT and GPT-3, GPT-4, so Google is building their own models, like they also have a conversational bot called Bard.
Yeah, Bard.
And their model behind it is Gemini. Some other, you know, open source community are building their own models. So there are a lot of this kind of models like ChatGPT going on. And also there are another kind of category of large model called diffusion models. There are companies like DALL-E and Midjourney. They are more targeting this image generation, art creation domain, which is different from conversations, but they're also very popular. You can describe like what kind of image you want, and they can create this very beautiful image for you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, I've used some of the art AI generators. Mm-hmm. I've used some of those. And I kind of enjoy playing with that. I think a lot of people do. But I know a lot of some of the early models, there were some issues because it was using copyrighted material to train it.
Yeah.
Is that still kind of a issue?
It's a concern. Okay. Yeah. I think somebody just filed a lawsuit to OpenAI about this. Because OpenAI, when they train their model, they just grab all the information from the web, and without really thinking very deeply about the the license copyright, because initially it's kind of like a crazy experiment. They probably don't even know that it can gain so much attention from the public. So I think they are working on it, right? Trying to do more regulation on how data will be used. Mm-hmm. It's a very big topic right now. But still, I think there is a long way to go.
Fair enough. Where else, because we hear about the big models. I mean, ChatGPT, everyone's heard about it, I think.
Yep.
Probably in the world at this point. But where else is machine learning, are we coming across it without realizing it?
For example, do you have this smart doorbell at home?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yes. Like the thing with a camera.
Yes.
And you can recognize the... For example, a package is just delivered.
Uh-huh.
There is probably some raccoon going across your front door.
Uh-huh.
That is also, they have some machine learning computer vision model in it that can recognize human activity through camera or recognize objects through camera. So that's another kind of AI technology, machine learning technology that is used in many homes. And this voice assistance is another example. Like you have Siri on your, if you have an iPhone or Google Home, right? Mm-hmm. Those voice assistant, the way the app recognize your voice command is also a typical machine learning application.
I remember when text-to-speech first came out years ago, and you had to train your phone. You had to say a bunch of words. They give you a huge list of words you had to say in order to use it. It had to train it to understand you. Yeah. But I notice we don't have to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because they have so much data now?
Yeah, because they have so much data and they have a bigger model now.
Oh.
Because the bigger model, you can think of it as a human brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Probably some electric brain. The bigger it is, then the more it can memorize. That's why a large model like ChatGPT can work so well, because when it gets some command or some questions, it can quickly retrieve the relevant memory from its huge brain and then figure out a solution.
Is there a limit to how much information can be put in? Because I'm thinking of this now, like you're right, there's a larger database, like more and more, and are we going to hit a point where...
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. OpenAI did some experiment, and they come up with a scaling law, like how the model scale, its performance scale as its size or the amount of training data increases. I think they sort of, one thing they tried the last few years is to make the model bigger and bigger. But I think they probably have sort of touched on the limit right now, because there has been some rumor, not confirmed, that they are trying to build a 10 times bigger model than GPT 3.5, and it sort of reached to the limit, and there was some setbacks.
Mm-hmm.
So the of course, we don't know what is the architecture behind the GPT 4. So something people said, like, it's actually not that big, but they have some innovative design.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said that they have multiple models. Is the same size of GPT 3.5.
Okay.
And they use it as kind of like a formal committee to make a decision. It's kind of like a mixture of experts. So that's basically a sign. If you read this kind of story, that's a sign that probably we have reached the limit. Because otherwise, why don't they just make the model 10 times bigger?
But now, the thing like my phone, if I'm using text-to-speech on my phone, and if I'm not connected to the internet, so is there small models, programs, or small models that are built into devices to be able to run certain things?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And so specializing of machine learning is, I guess I'm going to say, like an important mm-hmm. aspect?
Oh, it's totally. So this is reducing the cost. The size of model is always one big initiative in both academia and the industry. So one thing people do is called distillation. So you have a big model, powerful mm-hmm. model, and you train a much smaller model to emulate the behavior of the bigger model, okay. right? People call it knowledge distillation. So this is basically probably why when you don't have a connection to the internet, your model still works very well.
Yeah.
Probably they distilled a smaller model from a bigger model. Of course, you know, for many simple tasks, like recognizing people's voice or recognizing mm-hmm. some, you know, voice command, people already have many advanced technologies that can do it by just directly training a small model.
Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what are you researching?
I'm researching the interaction between humans and AI technologies. In particular, I'm super interested in how software developers build these AI technologies, like what kind of challenges they face,
mm-hmm.
and also how we can use this AI technology to improve the productivity of software developers and also the novice programmers who do not have kind of like a programming background.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
My students and I actually build AI technologies to democratize coding, right? To make it easier for people to write code without really having a CS degree.
Oh. Now what is that field? How do you mm-hmm. categorize yourself? What folder are you in?
It's a field called human-computer interaction.
Okay, human-computer
yeah.
interaction.
Right, it's kind of like a pretty interdisciplinary because we are not just studying machine,
mm-hmm.
like algorithms,
yeah.
models, but we also have to understand how those technologies are used by humans. So that's why at the beginning I told you that I actually do a lot of human studies,
yes.
talk to people, observe how they use these technologies. So it's I would say it's quite interdisciplinary and very different from many traditional CS fields where the only deal is data or code.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So are you, go through like psychology courses type thing? So you
yeah,
understand
yeah. we
you have
to,
a foundation in psychology and a foundation
right.
in coding and all these things?
Yeah, we have to understand some of the psychology, cognitive science, and also learning theories, like how humans learn stuff. Because the way humans learn stuff is very different from how machine learns stuff, right?
Yeah.
We are very good at, in academia, we call it inductive learning, where we sort of like, you only give a few examples to human, and then the human can suddenly generalize from these examples and
yeah.
get the abstract concept from the concrete examples. And that part is very amazing. And I think this is actually the goal of many machine learning people.
Yeah.
Like, how do we train a model, build an intelligent agent that can learn from a few examples like human instead of tons of data?
Do you think that's possible?
I think that's possible, but probably not now. People have started working on this since the 50s. And still, we tried many different things. Like back in the 80s, we are building expert system. Like we are hard coding all the knowledge, facts, and the rules, like human knows, into
mm-hmm.
logic facts. And that was not very scalable, so that's a failure. And then now we are into this path of building big models.
Mm-hmm.
We have certain success, but still, like, it's very costly. So I think in the future, maybe in the next 10 years, we will see more and more research and experiments on bringing down the size of the models and really build a general intelligent agent that can learn from a few examples like human.
Mm-hmm. Now, Will, you mentioned things being costly
mm-hmm.
to train and build models. I'm trying to follow the money. So right now, I mean, is like sometimes funding not there to maybe for machine learning for medical things because
mm-hmm.
all the money's going to interpreting shoppers' patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Is that happening in the field right now? Is the money going to places like that instead, or is that a problem?
like you are talking about the applications that attract all the money.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that that's a definitely one, like shopping websites, they make a lot of investment. Self-driving is still popular. It's been there for a while, but still like there has been some experiments on can we use big models to drive a car?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like a wide rear. And there's in federal agency, there is a lot of investment on the education side, like how do we teach the next generation the AI technologies. That's another where the federal money goes to. And I think there is also a lot of interest on just building foundational models, like the models that we only need to build it once and everybody can use it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There is also, if you look at the company's investment, there is a lot of recent emphasis on that.
Okay. Okay. How much sharing happens in your field and how much is proprietary?
A lot of are publicly available. So
okay.
Open science nowadays is a big deal, right? Like all the paper we publish in the conferences, we are, many conferences require us to open source our data and also code. So
oh, really?
I think computer science is probably one of the very open research field right now. So for example, you can find all my, the software, the code, the data, of all my research on my website, and I've often posted on GitHub.
Okay, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so.
That just seems like a newer, to me, it
yeah.
seems like a newer thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, that doesn't seem to follow traditional scientific research.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like you have your data, then you publish your results, and
yeah.
then it doesn't, but now,
Mm-hmm. being open.
Yeah, it seems
it's
we're hearing more and more people tell us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, oh no, this is all going to be publicly available.
Yep.
And
yep.
That surprises me.
No, I think it all makes sense because computer science is such a fast evolving research field.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fast evolving because people are open minded. People open source their tool and the data set, right? So another group can build on top of that. You know, when OpenAI can build these big models is actually because of Google. Open sourced their a very foundational work called Transformer. So that work it was published in 2017 and they open sourced that. So many other companies were following that work. OpenAI is one of them.
Okay.
Right. And also from the federal agency perspective, like NSF, National Science Foundation,
mm-hmm.
they push a lot, like the PIs funded by NSF. They require them to be open-minded and try to give open access, public access to their research products. I think all these factors together makes CS a very open and fastly evolving field.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see any cases where maybe it's better not for that to be open? Like where it's better to not open that, but are there
right.
examples of...
Wow, where's the Pandora's box of CS?
There are indeed a lot of discussion about this. For
uh-huh.
example, OpenAI was initially established as a nonprofit, and because initially they were not very happy about many teams and companies not open sourcing their
mm-hmm.
AI technology, so they call it OpenAI, right? But after they built these large language models, very big models, and they realized, okay, these models are very capable of doing things. Right. For example,
mm-hmm.
it can generate 1,000 fraud email, spam people, right?
Uh-huh.
It recognizes it can be used in the wrong way. So OpenAI start not, disclosing the details about their model because they have this concern about, that it will this very powerful models may be used in the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there is definitely. It's really a case-by-case scenario.
Right.
That's also why, nowadays when we publish in a machine learning conference, the conference requires us to write one section called ethic considerations to describe whether, if you open source it, you publish this technology, whether it will be used in a wrong way or like cause damage to the society or the human race.
Oh, wow.
So Yes, there is a lot of discussion going on right now about this.
It's very interesting to have that consideration towards like self-reflection about about what is what are
the ethical. Think about fake news. ChatGPT can generate news articles like 1,000 news articles per minute.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
Like it will basically make the situation even worse if everybody can use ChatGPT to write news articles. And that's going to be the cost of generating this misinformation or spam emails can be very low for these attackers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, where do you, that's definitely a concern, and I don't know how people are going to combat that. Mm-hmm. But where do you get your information? You mentioned conferences, and so it seems like anything in technology is evolving so fast. If you went by like traditional routes where you're publishing and then looking at stuff, you would be behind before you got there.
Oh, yeah.
And so how the heck do you all get information out to the world?
We publish on conferences. Like there are a ton of AI ML conferences right now every year. And also we post our unpublished and peer-reviewed paper on Archive. So Archive is basically a kind of like a platform that hosts a bunch of unpublished papers. So the other thing, we announce it on Twitter.
Yeah,
so this is basically how we get our information out. Regarding the getting information, like my students and I also follow people on Twitter. We sometimes will check Archive, and we also read papers from conferences.
I think before I figured out an answer to a solution, other people would have figured it out. I couldn't keep up.
It's very hard to keep up.
Yeah.
Like there are several times, like in the middle of my student found an amazing idea. I said, great, let's work on it. In the middle, after 1 month, we realized somebody already published this kind of work. Or they post something on Archive that did exactly what we want to do. So it's very fast evolving.
So does that force you to, you and your group to publish more frequently then in order to get your ideas out there?
Yeah, that's not really our mindset because like publishing papers is not just our purpose, right? We don't want to be a paper machine. We want still working on something that is novel and impactful. So we actually, what we do is we just keep close eye on what's going on and make sure that our idea is not taken yet. And if it's taken, okay, that's fine. Maybe we can improve that technology. But that is our mindset. Constantly chasing idea, chasing papers is really not a very good thing for a scientist.
Okay.
Because you may, like, it makes your research shallow. And we don't want our research to be shallow under the pressure of publication.
That's a good point.
That is. Yeah. I like that.
All right, where are we going? How many years ago? 10 years ago. I had not heard of machine learning 10 years ago. I know you said it existed for a lot longer than that.
A long time.
But me as average Joe, or average Stephen in my case, had not heard of that. And so what am I going to hear about in 10 years? Because I'm going to use the you again to represent all computer science in the world. What are you working on that I'm going to hear about in 10 years that I have not heard about yet?
I think, like, just based on my research, I think 10 years from now, because I'm studying how to democratize, you know, programming. So probably 10 years, all of you can actually write a program to automate some stuff without the need of really learning a programming language like Python or Java, right? You basically probably will just give a natural language description what you want to do, right? You want to delete all the files with this name pattern. And then some model like ChatGPT will generate a program for you and then execute that. So that's kind of like the way I think about programming in 10 years. So maybe 10 years from now, we don't teach CS students how to write programs. Right? We don't teach them all the syntax and the semantics about programming languages, but we teach them how to communicate with a model to build a software.
So that'd be quite a change, wouldn't it?
It's actually, there is a pattern in it, right? Because like 50 years ago, 60 years ago, people are still, you know, learning this low-level machine code that is not really human readable. I think, look at now, they are dealing with a high-level programming language that is getting closer and closer to human language.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just think looking at something like Scratch, where the kids can go in and like, oh, it fits here, I can do
that. Yeah,
you're
like playing a Lego game, right? Uh-huh. Maybe that's the future of programming. Yeah.
I knew it'd be something cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for this.
Yeah.
It's being enlightened a little bit more about machine learning.
Absolutely.
I like that.
I know. I like how you said every time you ask it, it gets more and more clear. I agree. Yeah. I think every time I hear it, I'm like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Science from the Experts from Purdue University's Superheroes of Science.
If you like this episode, subscribe, give us a positive view, and share the love. Boiler up!
Hammer down!